perhaps you can explain a little bit what the Norwich University is like, what kind of university it is.
This is the oldest private military college in the United States. And we have about almost 2,000 students, of which roughly three-quarters, I think, are military cadets. These are students who are studying to become officers.
Mm-hmm. And you are working on info security.
Today, these students here are part of the introduction to information assurance class, and many of them will go on to the advanced information assurance class next spring, this coming spring. And they're here to lend moral support and to see their professor give a lecture. It's also the only way I could give this lecture because it's right in the middle of my course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we won't lose more time now. I think we will need someone who will move the slides on the laptop so everyone here in Germany can see your slides.
And I will next.
Mm-hmm. Just a moment, please.
You know, I could start with my introductory notes while you're doing that. So I'm going to start by. Are you all set?
We've got some on the screen now. So we can start now. We've got some on the screen now.
Okay. I don't need the slides yet. I have a few introductory remarks. Es ist ein großes Vergnügen, heute Abend mit Ihnen zu sein. Ich spreche mit Ihnen von den Schneehügeln von Vermont. Einige meiner Informationssicherheitsstudenten von Norwich Universität sind mit mir hier und sie alle schicken Ihnen ihre warmen Grüßen. Ich werde diese Gelegenheit wahrnehmen, meinen Vortrag auf Deutsch anzufangen. Ich hoffe, dass Sie meine Fehler in Ihrer schönen Sprache vergeben werden. Einführung. Warum stören Sie mit Informationssicherheit? Die grundlegenden Gründe sind, die wir uns um Informationssysteme Sicherheit kümmern, dass einiges unserer Information gegen unautorisierte Bekanntgabe für gesetzliche und wettbewerbsfähige Gründe geschützt werden muss. Alles von den Informationen, die wir lagern und uns dazu beziehen, muss gegen unbeabsichtigte oder absichtliche Modifikation geschützt werden und in einer rechtzeitigen Mode verfügbar sein. Wir müssen auch begründen und die Echtheit, korrekte Zuschreibung von Dokumenten beibehalten. Wir schaffen, schicken und erhalten. Schließlich, wenn schlechte Sicherheitspraktiken Schaden zu unseren Systemen erlauben, unterliegen wir vielleicht Verbrecher oder zivilen gesetzlichen Vorgängen. Wenn unsere Nachlässigkeit es dritten Parteien erlaubt, über unseren kompromittierten Systemen geschadet zu werden, gibt es vielleicht noch schwerere gesetzliche Probleme. Eine weitere Frage ist, die in E-Handel entsteht. Diese gute Sicherheit kann schließlich als Teil der Marktentwicklungsstrategie gesehen werden. Verbraucher haben weit verbreitete Sorgen über Privatsphäre und der Sicherheit ihrer Daten ausgedrückt. Firmen mit starker Sicherheit machen ihre Anlage Hebelkraft ein, um die verfügbare Gruppe zu erhöhen, Käufer zu wollen und ihre Marktanteil zu erhöhen. Wir müssen nicht mehr Sicherheit als Verlustvermeidung rein anschauen. In heutigem Marktplatz wird gute Sicherheit ein wettbewerbsfähiger Vorteil, der zu Einnahmenfiguren und der Unterstlinie direkt beitragen kann. Teil meiner Arbeit ist, oben erwähnte Bodenintelligenz zu sammeln und zu analysieren. Mein Eindruck von all dieser Lektüre ist, glauben diese Nicht-Spezialisten, dass kriminelle Hacker die wichtigste Drohung gegen Informationssysteme Sicherheit sind. Aber alles, was ich von Informationssicherheit weiß, widerspricht diesem Glauben. Dieses Papier, und ich hoffe es, dass Sie haben mein Papier, dieses Papier ist ein Versuch, einiges der Fehlinformation über Sicherheit zu zerstreuen, die unter Nicht-Spezialisten zirkuliert und bedeutungsvollen Aufwertungen an beschaffendes Information praktische Richtlinien zu managern zu geben. Ein weiterer falscher Glaube ist, diese Sicherheit ist eine ehemalige Anstrengung, die erfolgreichen Schutz erreichen kann und dann allein verlassen kann. Wie alle Sicherheitsexperten heute vereinbaren, ist Sicherheit wie Qualität ein Prozess, nicht ein statisches Ergebnis. Mit der beständigen Änderung in Technologie in heutiger Welt ist es unvermeidlich, dass es neue Drohungen und Verwundbarkeiten die ganze Zeit geben wird. Schließlich glauben einige Leute, dass Sicherheit ein unheimlich teurer, komplizierter Prozess sein muss. Im Gegenteil, gibt es einige bedeutende Nutzen von relativ preisgünstigen Maßnahmen, wie es Kooperativkultur zu bessern und Verteidigung im Tiefe auszuführen, die relativ einfache Techniken benutzt, verfügbar. An diesem Punkt, mit Ihrer Nachgiebigkeit, werde ich zu Englisch wechseln. Ihre englischen Sprachfähigkeiten sind doch viel besser als meine deutsche Rede. Deshalb wird es tüchtiger sein, diese Sprache fortzusetzen. At this point, with your permission, we'll continue with the slides. If you would switch to the topics, the next slide. And in fact, the camera can face, that's good, so I can see what you're seeing. So next slide. Good.
Next slide, please.
Next slide, please. Yeah, I want to start with an overview of the key issues, which in my experience, and I believe in the opinion of most security specialists today, influence security in a cost-effective manner. The topic I was asked to speak on is essentially security on a budget. Where do you spend your time and effort to the greatest return with the minimum of actual expense? Now, it may require work, but we may be able to help you get your security processes going relatively quickly and at relatively low cost. Next slide, please. I think the consensus in the security field is that we really need policy. Policies are not simply a bunch of papers that you stick on a shelf. They are the result of careful analysis, and they encapsulate or summarize the strategic goals that a security plan must respect, must support. So one of the major points that can help you in your work in securing your systems is never to think of policies as finished. Policies are a living document. Policies change as your requirements and as the environment changes. Now, there are some policy issues that are critically important in every organization, and in a previous lecture to a different audience in Germany, I was asked to speak on social psychology. I won't go into details today, merely to point out that it is well established that when upper managers do not respect security policies, lower level employees eventually will abandon the security policies also. And this is a very natural problem that we face in any organization. So those of you who are in positions of high responsibility must recognize your obligation to show people that you genuinely support efforts in security. Otherwise, your work will be lost. Another principle is that access must not be confused with social status. Just because you are the Secretary General of an organization does not mean that you should have access to the root password on your servers. You have no business getting involved and interfering with that kind of job responsibility, and it's not an insult to be told, no, you cannot have access to our computer room without someone accompanying you from the computer room staff. Next slide, please. Another critical concept is that security will die if it is taught once. Security must be a constant effort. That implies, essentially, that you will keep it current in the minds of the employees who are responsible for protecting your systems. You cannot simply attempt to train your staff a single time and then be finished. You must continue a constant process of reminding people and stimulating them to be interested in protecting your information resources. And so there are many different ways that you can use. I'm not going to read them to you. They're on the slide that you can see. It's enough to remind you, if you haven't figured it out yourself, that repetition is a key element in effective security. And how can I resist? I have to say, repetition is a key element in security. And repetition... No, let's stop that. We won't go any further. Next slide, please. The human beings that work with you are critical elements of a successful security posture. Every security device you buy and install can be subverted, either from the very beginning or eventually, by non-cooperative employees or visitors or contractors or cleaning staff. You must hire people with care. You must manage them with attention to behavior that suggests that there is something dishonest or something incorrect going on. For example, I recall one case that my students are familiar with where I discovered a great deal of difficulty on the tape drives, in the magnetic tape drives in my computer room. I used to run a computer center. And it took us about a week to find out that someone had eaten a muffin, a little cake, brötchen, in the computer room and left crumbs and grease on one of our devices. And the crumbs and the grease then passed from one machine to another via the tapes. That's an example of how thousands and thousands of dollars of equipment can be damaged through inattention and inappropriate behavior by employees. We solved the problem, by the way. I put up a sign that said, if you ever eat in this computer room again, I will fire you on the spot. And we also put up a little a tube with alcohol-soaked swabs so people could wash their hands of grease and make sure they were clean before they entered. All of this is an example of careful attention to current day-to-day management. If you have to fire people, if you must terminate employment of staff members, everybody has to be treated the same. It has to be polite. It must respect their rights. It is important, however, that appropriate measures be taken immediately when someone is being fired. For example, I strongly urge you not to fire someone and then keep them on for 2 weeks so they can train their successor. I do not think this is a very good idea. It also makes it impossible for you, when you have someone whom you think is dangerous, if you have let other people stay for 2 weeks after their termination notice, how are you going to say this person has to leave now? The implication is this person is bad. At least in the United States, where there are more lawyers than engineers per capita, we have a country where you can be sued, you can be taken to court for damaging the reputation of someone in this manner. So the policy is you be very polite and you treat everyone the same when you terminate employment. You also make sure that you terminate access. So if someone leaves your employ, or even if someone is promoted or changed in job function, that all computer and network access must be controlled to reflect their new authorizations, either no authorization or a different set of authorizations. Next slide, please. Now, when we are dealing with system administration, I think there's a number of policies or practices which practically everyone agrees are critically important for effective security. And on this slide, you see the major topics, and we'll be looking at each of these in turn. So next slide, please. It is clear from all of the research that has been done on network and computer security that we need effective software and hardware configuration. We have to architect our systems in a way that reflects the needs for connectivity, but also the need for authorization and passage through perimeters. It is not enough simply to put a network together and say, oh, I guess it must be okay now because I bought such and such a firewall. In particular, a firewall is the embodiment, there's a fancy word for that in English, the instantiation. It is an example of policy made real. If you don't have an effective policy, a firewall is an expensive device for slowing down your network access. But in many cases, a badly configured firewall will do little or nothing to protect your systems. In addition, many network designers who lack proper training do not seem to consider the important role of topology, that is, the shape of the network, the construction of the network. And in many cases, in the security evaluations that I have done, I have been surprised and dismayed to find that everything in a company or in another organization is on one single network with complete access from anywhere within the network. That will not do. There are logical barriers which can be set up within the organization to differentiate among different categories of data. And your network topology should reflect those needs. A typical example, especially in Europe, under the European Privacy Directive, is extreme care in protecting private information of employees and customers and anyone else visiting your network. We have to be very careful not to divulge information without permission. That implies controls. So keep those considerations in mind as you are designing and configuring your networks and your firewalls. One other note, much like the security policy itself, network architecture should also be a dynamic and responsive element of your security posture. If conditions change, change the network. Alter the topology, introduce a new firewall if you have to, use appropriate levels of encryption, and so on. Don't simply assume that what you did last year is necessarily adequate for today's environment. Finally, on the topic of configuration, you may want to evaluate some of the new products that are coming onto the market in the last year for defenses against distributed denial of service attacks. These devices, and I don't want to go into the names of vendors, you can look those up yourself, the vendors provide very fast processors that fit in front of the firewall. and they operate at wire speed. That is, they operate as fast as the bandwidth that you are connecting. And so they do not slow down access of legitimate data to the firewall. However, they are tuned to recognize known patterns of attack under denial of service conditions. And so they can deflect the spurious or false traffic away from your firewall and prevent your system from being overwhelmed. Next slide. There were some astonishing surveys in the 1990s that, by the way, we should be on, yes, all right. Sorry. Some astonishing surveys in the 1990s that revealed that by far the majority of successful penetrations into computer systems were directly due to out-of-date software. In many cases, the vulnerabilities that were being exploited were several years old. This will not do. We must keep abreast. We have to be aware of the current vulnerabilities and the tools with which to patch the holes. You can't sit there essentially saying, you can attack me right here. We have old software. Come and break into our systems. This is not going to work. It's irresponsible. It's foolish. You want to be up to date. There are ways of finding out what the current conditions are. In Germany, the Bundesamt für Sicherheit in der Informationstechnik is a very useful tool. Another one is CertCC, very clear. You can subscribe for free to alerts. You will be given a warning of established vulnerabilities and how to fix them as they come out. Another tool that is very useful, especially when you have a complex mixture of hardware and software and different versions, is the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures Database. I'm sorry, in the slides that I have sent you, I forgot to give you the URL. However, if you type CVE and ICAT into your Google search engine, you will immediately find the URL. So I apologize for that. It was an oversight. On the next slide, I wanted just to show you the appearance of the Bundesamt für Sicherheit in der Informationstechnik webpage. Very useful, not only in German, but also in English for my students. You can use the German Security Center's pages. They have best practices. It is a very well-constructed site, easy to use, lots of suggested policies. A great resource, and of course for German-speaking people, it's ideal. So I do recommend that. The next slide shows you the introductory search page for the ICAT metabase, which is an interface to the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures database. This database records what it says, common vulnerabilities and exposures, ways of damaging your systems. And the interesting thing is, as you can see from the different fields, you can search and specify by time, you can search by kind of hardware, and the nature of the software environment that you're working in, even versions are available to you. So with an appropriate search pattern, you should be able to locate every single known vulnerability that affects your particular network and computing environment. It's an immensely useful tool, completely free. It is run by the famous MITRE Corporation, one of the big think tanks in the United States, and it is run for the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, and it's free. So by all means, use these resources and assign someone in particular, a specific human being, to take responsibility for monitoring these vulnerabilities and exposures. Next slide, please. As I was just saying to my students earlier this morning, we have come to the realization that even the best security systems must be prepared for failure. It is important for you to detect, and as you'll see on the next slide, but not right now, stay there. It is important to detect and... Oh, no, come back. back. It is important, thank you, important to detect and to respond to information security breaches. You can't just sit there saying, gee, I hope nobody breaks in because I have no idea what we're going to do. You have to be aware that people are attacking your system, and you have to be aware that your system has been breached. That is, the perimeter has been breached. I think the standard today is you really ought to be running an intrusion detection system on your networks. You must be informed of attacks and successful penetrations. Yes, some of these tools can be viewed as expensive. Some of them are not. I understand that there are some open source, that's right? Yes, some open source tools that are available to you. However you do it, think about intrusion detection systems as an essential element of today's security posture. It is simply good sense, and you really just have to grit your teeth and say, I have to do this. It is no longer a choice. The next slide now, thank you, the next slide does show a reminder that it's not enough to know about breaches. You must also be prepared to respond to breaches. One must keep in mind that unprepared staff are likely either to delay their response or to do the wrong things. Delaying a response gives your attacker the freedom to alter data or programs on your system. It's one of the most dangerous situations to be in. You have an unauthorized, unknown person attacking your system, potentially with the power to alter the software which you will use for production or the software you will use to protect your systems. You must not permit the attacker the luxury of walking through your computer systems doing what they want. You must be able to respond effectively and immediately with well-established, well-thought-out emergency response. It is not an inexpensive process. I know this says security on a budget, but believe me, it is an essential component of an effective security posture. If you spend millions of euros on your computer security defenses and you fail to have an effective response strategy, once your system is breached, you are at the mercy of the attackers, and those millions of euros are at risk. So, once again, I'm sorry that I have to tell you that it does take a great deal of work. It is not necessarily expensive in the obvious way of having you spend money openly and pay checks to other people, other companies. What it does involve, however, is that you're going to have to pay for the time of your own employees, possibly with an external guide, depends on your environment. But certainly, it is your employees who must develop the plan. It is only your employees who are sufficiently aware of the details of your production environment who can correctly plan a resulting a response which will not itself be dangerous. Let me give you an example. Suppose you are running a factory that makes large quantities of chemical substances, and you use real-time computers to control the process. So the computers mix the substances in vats, and they produce output and direct them to appropriate areas where they can be stored and shipped. Suppose you had a naive network administrator who saw that the computer system were under attack. Somebody was coming into the computer system. Well, without preparation and without warning anybody, without asking anyone, the network operator, who is 18 years old and has had no training, shuts down your process control. Well, those of you who have ever worked in a factory that is run by a computer are probably shaking your heads at the thought of having the control computers shut off in the middle of a production day. If it doesn't actually make your factory explode, it will at the very least stop it and produce major damage to the production that is supposed to be sent to your customers. Clearly, such a response would be worse than having a 13-year-old kid entering your computer system so he can tell his 13-year-old buddies that he broke into your factory. So we must have appropriate response, intelligent response, planned response, not simply a gut-level, unthoughtful response to an invasion. Next slide, please. Well, the final point I want to raise, and then I'd like to open this up for discussion. The final point I want to make is that the very best security plans in the world nonetheless need some form of evaluation. Now, in our experience, we know that it is very difficult to identify flaws in anything that we have worked extensively on ourselves. And I give you examples on the slide. Those of you who write know very well that trying to correct errors in one's own writing is particularly difficult. Partly this is because we know what we are trying to say. And so when we see our own writing, we may not realize that we have been unclear. We know what we mean. It's not obvious that someone else reading our text may not understand what we meant. Well, the same is true in programming. The same is also true in security. It is appropriate to test one's security. I do not recommend that you put an advertisement on the internet saying, "We will give 1,000 euros to the first criminal hacker who can break into our factory." I don't think that's a good idea. Really don't. I think that security evaluations are best done with careful forethought and preparation, so that not only will they help you evaluate weaknesses in your own security, but they will actually contribute to a more effective security posture. By integrating testing into the culture of the organization, we give our employees an opportunity to become emotionally as well as professionally involved in protecting the systems. We human beings are particularly good at games. Why not turn this into a game? In military environments, we often have red teams and black teams. We take it in turn to defend a system against attack, and then we turn around and the defenders become the attackers. It is an excellent way to keep people interested in the field of security, interested in keeping their defenses high, and aware of the kinds of techniques that attackers can use. Before I close, I can just tell you that here at Norwich University, we are involved in war games, cyber war games, electronic contests, with other military colleges in the United States, and in particular at West Point Academy in New York, if I remember correctly. We have annual games in which we compete with other teams to break into and to defend systems electronically. And at Norwich University, we've recently acquired an information warfare laboratory in which we will be able to simulate attacks on a wide range of defended structures and test the effectiveness of such defenses. As you can imagine, this has resulted in great interest among our students. Our university is one of the few in the country that has an information security special interest group. Many of the people in this class come to those meetings regularly. There's a general sense of interest and excitement about security in our school. I think the same can occur in your institutions. And at this point, I believe I have another roughly 8 minutes or so, maybe 8 or 10 minutes, to entertain questions from the audience, and the camera can switch over to the audience, and I'll do my best. I probably won't be able to answer in German, but let's see how we do.
Ja, vielen Dank. Sind Fragen aus dem Auditorium da? Also wie gesagt, gerne auch in Deutsch. Irgendwie schaffen wir das schon. One question on the right. Just a moment. We have just to hand over the microphone. Just a moment, please. Okay.
Hello, Mr. Kabay. My name is Uwe Beetz. I'm a captain in the Air Force. And so I'm interested in your opinion because as I see you're doing lessons in computer security at a military academy. And do you deploy HoneyNets for a learning purpose?
Would you wiederholen Sie bitte? Say, repeat it.
Do you deploy HoneyNets for a learning purpose for your students?
I happen to have...
You have a specialist?
Yeah, we happen to have some students who are very interested. If you could shift the camera, Mr. Pelletier, there he is. Mr. Pelletier is doing some very interesting research on HoneyNets and has written two papers this term. One of them is dealing with the legal aspects and policy aspects of running honeypots and HoneyNets, and the other is a technical overview, and Mr. Pelletier will be taking a special course in the spring looking at this very issue, working with another colleague who is, I don't think he's here. Oh, there he is. Sorry, Mr. Muller, who's working on intrusion detection systems. To summarize some of the critical issues that I have learned from my students, as I understand the issues, one critically important problem that we face, and this may be even greater in the European Union because of the directive on privacy, is extreme care in designing the honeypot or the honey net so that it does not lead to accusations of what we call entrapment, that is, of tricking people into doing things that they should not be doing. Secondly, even though you may put up a warning notice that says this network is for authorized uses only, you will probably also have to warn the intruders that they may be monitored and that their actions may be recorded and studied. And this is also an issue of privacy law. So be very careful about that. Third, a point that Mr. Pelletier brought up this morning in our discussions before this telecast, it is very important not to let your relatively open HoneyNet or HoneyPot become a platform for attacks on other victims. So these are critically important elements in the planning for honeypots. Finally, I would suggest that the value of the honeypot or HoneyNet will be increased by effective training and simulations before it goes live. I do not see the point of having a site that can be attacked and observed if the observers don't know what they are doing. The observers must be prepared to collect useful information, to analyze the information preferably in real time, and to see what they would do to respond to the kind of behavior that they are observing were it to occur on a production system. So I hope that speaks to the issue, but if you have other comments, I would welcome your saying something else.
Okay, that's very interesting, and maybe it's a good idea that I contact you via email, and you can give me a contact to your student.
Absolutely.
Because I'm planning a German HoneyNet, and we want to become a part of the research alliance of Lance Bitzner's the HoneyNet project, and we can share some ideas.
That would be great. The email address should be in several places in the documents that you have received. Very good.
Okay, thank you.
Nächste Frage, bitte.
Ja, weitere Fragen? Im Moment keine Fragen. Let me ask one question. You and some of the other presenters today have suggested security measures which are not purely technical. They deal with a lot of communication between the CEO level in the companies and the technicians and the employees. On the whole, what do you suggest to improve the communication structure around IT security within the companies? Do you suggest building security teams or something else?
I think if I can summarize the question as I understood, and you should hold the microphone a little further away, the technician has told me. If I understand your question, you're asking, given that we know that we should have good communications among the different elements of our organization, what are some of the methods that people have found helpful in improving that degree of coordination and collaboration? Is that a fair statement of the question?
That's okay.
Yeah. There's a wide range of tools that have been used successfully. The generic topic would be viewed as an issue of security awareness coupled with the issue of institutional lines of responsibility. Thinking in terms of responsibility for security, one recommendation that I support, I think it's a useful one, is to assign named responsibility for security, and specifically for information security, to a specific person. In America, these are being known as chief security officers or chief information security officers, and they report at the same level as the chief executive officer, the chief financial officer, the chief operating officer, and the like. And the theory is that information security should not be viewed as subsidiary, subaltern, or below the level of reporting responsibility of information technology. So security should not report to the information technology officer, but rather be viewed as parallel. This is similar to what we have in the financial sector, where the chief auditor does not normally report to the chief financial officer on the grounds that they maintain a creative tension between them. They are not hierarchical. So that's one point, is try to assign responsibility at a level that has a great deal of authority to enable effective security. As for security awareness, that is, encouraging the upper managers to contribute to security and communicate effectively, I touched very briefly on some of those ideas earlier. One of the most critical is that there not be any exceptions made for security measures for upper managers. That means that the top official in your organization should be wearing a badge if everybody else wears a badge. And I warn you that if he or she does not, then the people who report to that person will stop, and then the people who report to them will stop, and eventually nobody will wear badges, and a stranger will walk into your environment and not be recognized as a stranger. So consistency is one element. That's simply an obvious example of communicating the importance. I think that a mission statement that is signed by the top officers of your organization can play an important role in helping all of the employees to understand that security is not an incidental off to one side. Security is an important and central aspect of the way they do their work. Third, I would recommend that all evaluations of employee performance necessarily involve a degree of evaluation of their compliance with and support for information security policies and practices within the organization. Fourth, I would recommend that there be a named employee in every department or every floor of your environment who has responsibility for security. This would be the security chief, just like we have the emergency response chief who has a helmet and an armband. We also would have a key contact in each department who would be up to date on security issues, who would collaborate with other members of the security response team, who would contribute their ideas and would listen to their co-workers and transmit information about the effectiveness of security measures. Finally, I can recommend that in your organization's newspaper or newsletter that there be a space reserved for news about security. It does not have to be news about security in your firm. It suffices to be something interesting that can be made available just to keep people aware of security issues. I hope you will find these ideas helpful. Next question.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, I think there aren't any questions anymore. Just a moment. I've got one.
Gerhard Kafka, I'm working as a freelance journalist and also supporting Network World. With great interest, I've seen on one of your slides that you encourage the audience to evaluate DDoS systems. And I've looked into the matter. Isn't it too late if the customer in the customer premises is trying to prevent DDoS attacks? Wouldn't it be a better place in the service provider net to do it? I'm curious to hear your opinion on that.
Yes. I think there can be no doubt that there are three major areas where the fight against distributed denial of service must be centered. Number one, as I would say, number one has to be the platforms that are used for zombies or slave programs that then launch the actual attacks. We have millions of unsecured computers on the internet which are being used as platforms for attack. I would like, for example, Windows XP to be altered so that it does not allow access to raw sockets. I think that was a terrible mistake, and I've spoken of this in the past. Secondly, I would like to see every computer that is sold to novice users be equipped with a firewall that has been configured to forbid outbound traffic without a good reason. There has to be control. The problem with that is that the beginner users will very cheerfully say yes to any question that they receive from their firewall. So that's, although it will help, it is not enough. The Internet service providers have a major responsibility for tracking flows of spurious traffic that are used in distributed denial of service attacks. And indeed, they play a critical role, and the more that they recognize these flows of spurious traffic, the better for everyone involved. Nonetheless, as I said earlier, we must expect failures. We should not expect one single locus to be the only place that we install protective measures. And therefore, I would argue that on the receiving end, it makes sense to have devices which can identify distributed denial of service attacks and divert them from the firewalls. One final point is that those firewalls should all be configured to forbid egress by packets with forged headers, and they should be prevented from accepting packets which have internal addresses on inbound packets. All of these at once, I believe, should be instituted for an effective fight against distributed denial of service attacks.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we are nearly out of time now.
Yes, we have
questions?
1 minute before I am shut off.
1 minute. Okay, so I think we should stop now. I'd like to thank you very much that you have been with us this evening for us.